Welcome to Journeys of Romance. I'm your host, Jess Michaels. Today's guest has such an interesting creative journey. I'm like super excited to talk to her about it. She started in fashion. She now writes romance. She writes contemporary romance and romantic comedy. Please welcome USA Today bestseller and RWA New York City Golden Apple Author of the Year, Quanah Jackson, who also writes as KM Jackson.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited.
I'm so excited.
Excited, but kind of shy because I don't know if I interview very well.
We're
I don't like talking
out.
About myself. We'll see how this goes.
Well, we're going to talk about writing. Everybody loves to talk about writing. So.
Yes, I do like to talk about writing. Writing I will talk about.
Well, and I think it is different, you know, when you sit down and somebody says, you know, tell me about blah, 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 and then you talk versus like a conversation about writing, I think is something that we all sort of like. Like, it's fun because you see someone that does the same thing you do and it's like, oh my God, how do you do that thing? And that's always really exciting for me, which is the thing I like about this the most.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was just talking to a woman the other day at a picnic, and she does workshops for women, like empowerment workshops. And she was like, oh, Quanah, I'd love to have you come and do something. And I was like, oh, as soon as somebody says, would you come and talk to people? I'm like, no, thank you. is my default answer to that. And she's like, what would you like to talk about? I was like, not about Quanah. Let's not talk about that. But we got to talking for a while, and she was just asking me about writing and, you know, about romance and things like that. And she's like, okay, so that's what we can talk about. I was like, oh, okay.
Oh, that I can do.
That I can do. If we want to just talk about books and, you know, the process and things like that, sure, I can have a conversation with women about that. That's fun.
Yeah, so, right. That's the fun part. Talking
that's
about
the fun
like,
part. Yeah.
So I was like, don't how ask the sausage me to sit gets
up
made.
And, yeah, don't ask me to sit up and read. I said, as long as you don't ask me to read an excerpt from my books, I'll be fine.
Yeah, I live in terror of that. Like, oh. I don't like to listen to my books, my audiobooks. Like my husband who manages all the business side for me, he listens to my audiobooks for the just like the read through because I can't
bless
listen.
Him.
I don't want to list my own. I don't want to listen to my own words. I don't want to read them out loud to other humans. that's I don't know why that is. Why do you think we are so freaked out by that?
I don't know. I think it's I won't do it. I don't listen to my audiobooks either. I've listened to maybe the sample on Audible for about 2 minutes tops, and then I stop. I think there are some actors who won't watch themselves on the screen. It's sort of the same thing. It's like, no matter how I will edit a book until it's dead. Any of my books, none of my books would ever get published without deadlines. Without firm deadlines, I just keep going. Thank goodness for deadlines. Thank goodness for firm deadlines. You know, I had to make, I talked to my agent about this. We had a real talk, and he's like, you know, you've got such great ideas. I'd love some more things from you. And I was saying, well, you know, I'd really like to just, you know, submit fulls and not have all this pressure and stuff. But then I really got to thinking. I said, but if I didn't have a real deadline, maybe nothing would get done.
Right.
Because I would just keep editing, and that's my whole process. I always want to make it better. I always want to change something, even up until the end. Once the book is published, I don't even want to reread it. I write it and forget about it.
Yeah, I've been doing this nightmare scenario of like reading through some older books because I'm trying to do like some past promo stuff, and I don't really, I literally do not remember. I've written too many books. I don't remember. I'm like, what? Somebody said to me, what happened? You know, how come you didn't write about blah, blah, blah in this book? And I'm like, I don't know any of those people. I don't think it's
we're the same person. We are. Yeah. I do that too. I have some lovely people, and you know, I'm so grateful for them, but they'll say to me, oh, and they'll quote something back to me, and I'm like, who wrote that? Who said that?
Was it good? Did I do a good job? Although I have to say, like, reading the really old stuff, the stuff that was a long time ago, it doesn't even feel like me. So that sort of helps, you know, versus like reading something that I just wrote. I feel like I feel more nervous about it when I read it because I feel like it's like me today and not me from 10 years ago, maybe, or something, you know, where.
Do you like reading the old things? Do you feel that's a little more authentic, or what do you feel better about?
Well,
now I'm interviewing
I feel better
you.
About
let's switch this interview right around, Jess. Now, what do you like better?
See how you're tricking me here. Uh-huh. I don't know. I mean, I think, and maybe you feel the same way. Like, I feel like what I write today is obviously better than what I wrote 10 years ago. If it isn't, then I'm screwed. Like, I'm not growing at all. And that's, I'm fucked, to be quite honest about it. But
sure.
Like, I mean, you know, when I read something that's really old, I don't remember it. So I don't have a vision in my head of what it should have been. And then I think that's why I like it more. Like, I don't mind reading it because it's like, I don't remember the thing that I thought it was going to be, like that perfection. Gotcha. You know, I mean, do you have like a perfect book in your head when you're sitting down? Like you're like, oh, this is going to be great. And this is going to be amazing. And then when you write it, you can never like live up to that. It's kind of how I feel.
Never. Yeah. In my head, the initial idea of the book is so fantastic.
Sparkly.
And it's just, oh, this is going to be the greatest thing ever. But once I start writing, it's like, oh, I can't make it that great. You know, it just doesn't feel like I can live up to that. But, you know, people have told me I'm way too hard on myself. And it's probably pretty good. It's probably okay. I'm not going to say pretty good. It's probably fine.
It's all right.
It's okay. It's probably fine.
Don't oversell it.
I'm not going to do that. I'm never going to do that. But yeah.
But if, you know what I mean? I mean, I think I feel like that's really common though, that we judge our own work at such a higher level than you would judge somebody else's. You know what I mean? Like that you would look at your own work and say, oh, I could have done that better. Or I see this screw up, or I could have plotted that better, or, you know, whatever, more than you would see in somebody else's work. If you were like a friend's work, we're always harder on ourselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm always in awe when I read other people's works. I'm like, how did they do that? Mm-hmm. It just seems so, the vision seems so big.
Yeah. And how did they capture like all of the elements of that? Because I think that's where I feel like I screw up while I'm in the middle of writing, right? Is that I go like, you know, I want to get from here to here and there's 27 steps and I never feel like I'm completing all the steps correctly. And then I'm shocked myself because after I go back and I start editing, I'm like, oh no, I did okay. All right. I did all right.
It's all right. I had some kind person and tweet to me about my book Insert Groom Here. And they're like, I reread this book all the time because your transitions are so strong. It's a masterclass in this and that. And I'm like, who in the heck are you talking about? You have got to be kidding me. Do you know how much I struggle with transitions? I don't know how to do them. I never know how to do them. What are you talking about? And I'm like, I really need to go back and read that book because I have no clue what you're talking about. It, you know, so I guess we are really way too hard on ourselves, but. I don't know I wonder if that's a female thing, and I really hate to bring that up, but it could be in some ways, or it could just be a writer thing.
Maybe both. I mean, because I think we're held to such a higher standard of perfection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, we're not allowed,
especially
to
romance
fail.
Writers.
Yeah,
it could be a little bit of a romance writer thing also, because we really are held to a higher standard of maybe not perfection, but of criticism.
Yes.
Yeah. In the publishing world.
Right. I mean, we've always been sort of that stepchild of publishing that they want to make their money off of, but they don't necessarily, you know, want to support or take seriously. And I feel like that's changing a little bit. You know, I mean, we get more interesting coverage anyway of what we do now and more serious coverage of what we do. But I mean, it does feel like that you're always trying to live. I don't want to say live down, because I don't buy into that what we write isn't important, because I think what we write is super important.
Oh, I think it's super, super important.
I mean, I think that writing something that is hopeful is the most important thing that I do with my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't I don't want to say living it down, but sort of, you know, I mean, you're going along and you're like, I wrote a great book and it's amazing and I'm okay. I'm doing all right. I'm having a tiny little Joan Wilder moment. And then somebody's like, romance sucks. And you're like, great. Oh, good. Nope. There it is. There's the rub.
Yeah. Well, when they say that, I'm like, and you suck. No.
Yeah, you suck too.
You suck too. Well, show me your book. Show me, okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And it just, I don't know. It seems to go cyclically too. I mean, we used to just kind of get it around. You could kind of expect it around Valentine's Day. And now I feel like there's a lot more. We're getting more coverage, which I guess is a good thing. And so you see it more throughout the year. So you're not quite as braced for it, or I'm not anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah. I think it's probably a lot of jealousy. I think a lot of that is jealousy. I'm like, haters, whatever. But,
well, and I think, again, it's like not taking, you know, I mean, it is a genre that is written in huge proportion by women,
mm-hmm.
or by if written by men, then it is not written by straight, you know, cis heterosexual, mm-hmm. like it's more likely to be written by women or people who identify as a woman or men who are not like straight, like frat boy dudes. So yeah. we get that cover, you know what I mean? I mean, there's kind of a disregard for the fiction because it's speaking from a perspective that, you know, kind of your white patriarchy isn't really down with.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's part of it too.
True. Yeah. True. And, you know, we're dealing with feelings.
Right. Feelings. Those
oh
ugly
God.
Things.
You know, those things called feelings. And we're dealing
and sex.
Not all the time, but yeah, I was just going to say, and then there's sex. And it's like, oh, the nerve of us, there's feelings and there's sex, you know, as opposed to maybe, you know, murder.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh.
Yeah, nobody ever asked Stephen King, like, how many people have you murdered? Because
that's what I say all the time. That's always my comeback. I'm like, okay, people are like, oh, you know, so, and they give me that look, and I'm like, oh, so do you ask people who write, you know, mysteries and murders how many people they've killed?
Yeah, never. They never do.
Never.
That.
It's like, oh, okay, good on you, you know.
Let's back up just a little bit. Were you always a big reader? I mean, was that something that was always like important in your household, or did you grow up kind of as a big reader?
I did. I was always, it's so sad to say now that I'm a writer, I don't feel, I still am a big reader, but I feel like there's not as much time to read
yeah,
as I
no,
want
to. No, I feel
to.
The same way.
I hate the way my reading has slowed down. I used to be a person who could read a couple of books a week. Or, you know, if it was a smaller, say, a Harlequin, a book a night.
Yeah.
And so that's the type of reader I was. I started out, you know, with taking my grandmother's Harlequins at about 12, you know.
Oh,
and
yeah.
that was the sort of gateway for me. So I was always a huge reader, loved to read. And it was always pretty much romance was the thing for me. You know, I had a time when I would go on binges, I guess, with Cozy Mysteries way back when.
Yeah.
Like the Mary Higgins Clarks and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I would binge on those for a while. But mostly it was just romance, romance, romance.
Yeah.
I did do, you know, a long stint with women's sexier women's fiction, the Jackie Collins mm-hmm. loved.
Yeah.
And I loved my women's fiction, Terry McMillan, and adored. But it was always women's fiction and romance for me.
Right. You wanted that romantic element. It couldn't just be the one thing.
Like, no, yeah. Not just the one thing. I'd always had to have a little bit of a romantic element to hold me because I wanted something happy, something joyful.
Yeah.
To keep me going. Yeah.
So I know that your bio says that you had two dreams, to be a fashion designer and to be a writer.
Mm-hmm.
So were you always wanting to write during the same time that you were kind of a big reader? Were you sort of thinking about your own storylines and doing that? Or, you know, did that come later on?
The writing came later on. I wanted to work in fashion a little more.
Yeah, and I'm super excited to talk to you about this because I think the fashion thing is such a different kind of creativity first because it's a visual creativity. And also, yeah. Like, I love fashion to look at. I'm so not a fashion. Oh, my God, my closet is terrible. You wouldn't.
Yeah, so is mine.
You wouldn't want to speak to me if you knew.
My but, closet like, is I mean, terrible, I'm not, too.
I'm not a fashionista in what I buy, but I'm such a, I love to look at fashion and I love the whole process of design and that sort of thing. So I'm super curious. So you wanted to be a fashion designer more than a writer. So how did that sort of come about? Because you've lived both of those dreams, which is amazing.
Sort of, kind of. I'm saying sort of, kind of, because I sort of, you know, it and it's all, you being a writer, you know, it's sort of there's the outside dream and then there's the real life of it.
Right.
And
right.
Real life is never what the dream is. So, you know, it's like I was a fashion designer, but it was never for like, you know, any big fancy house. You know, I was working for mid-level houses and it's sort of, I have a book called, what is that book? Well, it's not Romancing the Fashionista. It's like, okay, now I've got to pull up my books. It's like, what books have you written? I do
What
have a
book?
designer book. What books? Threads of Desire. My book, Threads
Yeah.
of Desire, sort of gets a little bit into, it's a sexy, one of my sexier books, and I love it. But oh, look at me talking about myself like I'm all that. But Threads of Desire sort of gets into what the fashion world is was a little bit. And like the
Yeah.
real life of working in a fashion house and like how it really is. So if anybody wants that, pick up Threads of Desire because it's about
Yeah, I'm gonna have
a
to.
plus size fashion designer
Oh, cool.
and sort of how it really is working in a fashion house. But let's see, what was my background? I went to Stuyvesant. I was sort of this, I went into fashion the sort of weird kind of way. I was kind of a geeky, nerdy girl, very much into math and science. Even though I loved fashion, math and science kind of came easy for me. And in New York, you take these specialized tests to go to high school. And there were specialized schools for math and science and things like that. And just every kid just took them. You just sort of took them. And I happened to get in Stuyvesant, which Stuyvesant was in the news, has been in the news in these years for not letting in, not letting in, but a lot of minorities. Historically have not gotten into Stuyvesant. The testing has been all skewed. It's been a hot mess, still a mess in New York. But back in the day, I happened to pass the test, got into Stuyvesant because my math was, I was just decent in math. Don't ask me what's happened to me in math right now. I don't know. I've lost it. So I got into Stuyvesant, and you get into Stuyvesant, your mother says you're going to Stuyvesant. But I also got into art and design because I really wanted to go to art and design high school. Because I wanted to go for fashion design. But I, at the same time, made it into Stuyvesant. And so my mother's like, you're going into Stuyvesant. You're going to be Smarty McSmartster and, make a lot of money being with your brains and being smart. I was like, I don't want to go to Stuyvesant. But I
Right,
had to
she
go
saw that
because
as a different kind of opportunity, clearly.
absolutely. So went to Stuyvesant. I was just an okay, not great student in Stuyvesant, but I made it through, It's like, I did it. Did it. Made it through Stuyvesant, but it was time for college, and I was like, well, that's it. I'm doing what I want. And decided I was going to go to FIT, which is the Fashion Institute. And at that point, you had to do a portfolio and sew a garment. But it was time for I had no design skills from going to Stuyvesant for 4 years. I had no drawing skills, no sewing skills, no anything. And here were all these kids coming from like art and design and fashion schools and stuff going to FIT. So what I did was I did a pretty terrible portfolio, but I guess I had some decent color skills, but no good drawing skills. So I sewed a I'll never forget like 8-gourd denim skirt, really heavyweight denim by hand. I didn't even have a sewing machine because I was poor, PO poor, by hand, and a bustier to go with it. And I think that's what got me into the school because you had to sort of like, it was sort of like one of those like, America's Got Talent situation. You go in front of a panel with your portfolio kind of thing, like Project Runway, and you show your portfolio and you show your garment. And they were probably like laughing at my portfolio. And when they flipped my garment over and saw that it was sewn by hand,
They were
I think
suddenly like, wait.
they were like, wait, this girl
She's
really
got
wants to go.
skills.
This girl wants to go to this school. They probably looked at my poor fingers and they were like, you did all this by hand. I was like, yeah, I did. And I think they saw that I came from Stuyvesant. They were like, oh, let this poor kid in. So I went there and worked, got my degree from FIT and went there, worked for 2 years, worked for a couple of fashion houses, worked for a couple of years. And what happened was I had my twins. And a strange thing, I lost a babysitter when my kids were in school, lost her babysitter, and we couldn't find another one. And this is long story short, I said to my boss, I just need to leave a half hour early at 5:30 in order to pick up my kids. And
Reasonable.
she wouldn't go for it. I said, I will take my work home, but I have no one. And she says, no, we need you here. And I had been traveling to Turkey, different places, stuff like that. I was like, but I need to pick up my children. Can't leave them on the street
Right.
after school,
What do you expect me to do?
after daycare and stuff like that. And there's nobody to get my kids, And So she said, no, we need you here. So I'm like, okay, well, I guess I gotta quit this job. And that's what happened. I thought I'd find freelance work. And that's how I ended up being home. And as I was looking for different work, I'm reading different books and things like that. And an idea came to me. I said, I'm gonna try to write a book. And that's what
Yeah.
started me writing.
Wow. So
That
just, I mean, that's coming, you know, not having really, so you hadn't written at all during any of this time. You
I
weren't really
hadn't written at all
fiddling.
before that. I mean, I remember, I still was a big reader, loved reading, and all through my years of high school and being on the bus going downtown and the train going downtown, I'd always dreamed of, if I wasn't a designer, I'd be a writer. I always had dreams of being a writer too, either a designer or a writer or probably a film director, because I love being creative. I love actually creating things. Making garments or not the process of it, but the process of seeing it made. The whole, see, I'm a very visual person or sort of like a tactile person. If there's a craft, I might not be good at it, but I'll try it. It's like, oh,
Right,
that
'cause you
looks
want to
fun.
feel how it works, and
Yeah, I'm like
it's
that.
such a different kind of creativity than writing. So do you feel like that visual creativity sort of influences you in when you write? I mean,
Oh, it does.
do you like put together a mood board, or I mean, do you do things that help to feed that visual creativity while you're working?
Oh, I do. I live on YouTube, probably way too much, but I get a lot of things from YouTube. I'm on Pinterest all the time, finding, places for scenes and casting my characters and doing everything down to what, looking at what they're wearing or, what they'd possibly be wearing, where they'd be hanging out. Yeah, I'm really visual. So it's like I said, I would probably, if I could. If I knew how to write screenplays, and maybe one day I would like to write the screenplay, cast the movies, and direct it. Plus, 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 work on the costuming or work in the costume design department if I could.
You want to be every woman.
I want to be every woman, though of course I can't. But for each of my books, I think before they're books, they're sort of like movies in my head. And I think probably most writers are like that. We're creating worlds, so you kind of visualize the whole world. You see it first. I think the visualization of the story is much easier to me than the actual writing of the story, if that makes
Well, right,
sense.
because that's no, it does, because you do you sort of it's the kind of what we were talking about earlier, where it's like you have this perfect visual image, and now you have to find words that will make that visual image come to life for other people, and that I
Yeah,
think
the
that's
words is
the
that's the
yeah
hardest
the
part for
words are
me.
the hard part,
The
because
words,
you
I'm like,
never feel like you're hitting
please.
it.
Yeah, I never feel like I can live up to the visual image in my head. It's
I think
very
it's
weird.
interesting though that you sort of are picking. You really are sort of building it almost in your head as a movie, where it's like, well, who would be cast, and what would be the look, what are the location shots, and what's the fabric that they're wearing, and how would that feel when I describe this? And like, it does feel like that you sort of take that, and I think that's the thing that really fascinates me about, going. I talked to Jen LeBlanc a little bit about this too, because she's a photographer. So again, very visual medium, and so it's like, how does that make you, because I don't have that background, so I don't do all of those things. I do have visual images that come into my head when I'm thinking about a story, but it's not that full. It's, you know what I mean, it sounds like you have a real full sense of what you want it to look like in your head and what you want it to look like or feel like on the page.
I do, and which is probably why I'm maybe a little bit too hard on myself with the actual writing of it. Because it seems
You've
so
seen it
sharp.
already.
I've seen it already. Yeah, I've
So
seen
does
it
that mean
already.
you're a plotter because you do sort of fully visualize?
No, not so much. I am a plotter. I used to be a total pantser, but I'm sort of a half and half. I've had to turn into more of a plotter now that I do have contracts and deadlines, and it's helped me, because you have to give an outline and a synopsis for approval, things like that. So I do half and half. So I can't say I'm totally not. I probably hold on to the whole pantser thing more than I should, but I think it makes me feel free and creative. I'm like, I'm free, I'm creative. Look at me, I'm so fancy. But I am a plotter, but it always ends up going its own way. Characters always end up taking over pretty early and just doing what the heck they want. And I'm like, oh, great. Here you go. Where'd you come from? What are you talking about? And I have to just go with it.
So it sounds like you kind of frame it out, and then you sort of let the characters go where they need to go, because you know if you fight them, it's just going to make it miserable for everyone involved.
For everyone, including myself. And I'm like, oh, right. And then I hate the story. So when I do give out lines for approval, I try to make them as vague as possible, because I know
stuff happens.
Trust me, it all works out. Trust me. Guess what? It's a romance.
They fall in love. It's fine.
It's fine. Because I also don't want to make myself bored with the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, process wise, do you feel like you're a fast writer, or do you feel like, I mean, I know that that's sort of a, it's like asking someone how spicy something is. Cause like to someone else, like, so yeah, there's no spice to it at all. And I bite it as a very sad, super stereotypical white lady. And I'm like, oh God, it's so hot. It burns. You know, but to somebody else, it's like, it's a zero heat, you know? So, and this, I think, is fast is sort of that same way, where it's like, how fast do you write? But I mean, do you feel like that you,
I feel
you
know, like I'm you, super slow. I feel like I'm you? So slow. But
when you actually are like
to other people,
through.
I might be fast. I don't know. Yeah. I feel like I'm terribly slow.
Do you have a structure of like how many pages or words that you try to do in a day or a week? Or I mean,
sure, that never happens. Of course. I did, but that doesn't happen. Does that happen? Absolutely not. Sure, it'd be great if I could do 2,500 words a day. And in real life, that can actually happen.
That's sure.
Perfectly doable.
But you feel like consistently you won't do it. Absolutely not. You want, that's a dream, but it's not a
dream.
Goal necessarily.
That is an absolute dream life world. But yes. You know, it really just depends on life and what happens. You know, I've had years where, you know, it's hard to, this is such a hard thing. There are times when I'm like, okay, I'm not doing anything. But then, okay, I've published 2 books in a year. So that's pretty good, you know, or 2 books in a novella. So that's, you know, really excellent for some people. But then there are some people, or then I might have a year where there's only 1 book that I can get done. So, and, you know, I'm trying to be a little kinder to myself with it all and just say, you know, and just go with it. It's really hard. I know there are people who can, you know, put out a book every 3 months and do really high quality work like that. And when I look at those people and see what they're doing and compare myself to them, I just want to jump out the window and be like, Kwani, you really suck. You're not doing anything.
Oh, no.
And then I start to, you know, say you're not fast enough. And then I hate all my work. So I'm trying to just look at what I have done and be grateful for that, you know. So it's really hard. The whole, you know.
The fast versus slow. And I think
the fast
it is really
versus
hard.
Slow. Because other people are like, hey, look at how many books you've written. And I'm always feel like I'm not doing enough. Yeah. But it's like, yeah, wait a minute. Look at how many books I have written. So it's like, I'm trying to get off of that fast versus slow and work on just being a little more consistent, which I'm not. So today I was just working in my planner and looking at, I have a lot to do. I just got edits in. I have other things I have to do. And I have a pretty tight schedule. It's like, okay, just work on that right now, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing I think that sometimes outsiders who don't really understand is that it's not just like sitting down and writing a book and that's it. Like I sit down, I write a book, I turn it in and now it's out. You know, I mean, that's not the process is, you know, I mean, you're writing and you're rewriting and you're editing and you're copy
and then you've
editing.
Got the books before that you've got to edit and copy edit. Yeah.
You're always in some process of work on some level, which is why before we started recording, you and I were talking about, you don't really have a weekend, especially if you're writing full time, right? That's So, and I think when you do write full time and that's the sort of singular job that you have, you don't have a weekend, you don't have an evening, you don't, I mean, it's all, you're always at work in some ways and you're also always not at work. And it's a weird, like sort of Schrodinger's box of, am I working or not working?
Absolutely.
If I open
always,
this up, am
you're
I
always
successful
thinking
or not?
Of work. You're always thinking of what's the next thing. And then there's promotion and things like that. It doesn't turn off.
No, it never turns off. And I also think that because of indie, where, you know, you have like for people like me, where I always wrote really fast and I wrote and I was frustrated within the traditionally published system because I couldn't write as many books as I wanted to. I mean, that indie system is great for me because I can just, you know, put out books. They're good books and I can put them out very quickly. And that really works for me. But then that becomes almost like the standard, the norm, you know, that you're supposed to write 23 books a year. Maybe not that many. That might be, you're a scammer probably if you're doing that. But
so I'm like,
you're supposed to put.
I lost you for a second there, Justin. Then I heard 23 books a year. I was like, what?
You're like, no.
Wait.
But, you know, I mean, you're just, you know, people are putting out four or five mm-hmm. or six books regularly and doing really well. And then that becomes like, well, I should be doing that. And I think that that's like such a myth. And this is coming from someone who's a fast writer, is that that's somehow the best thing for everyone.
Yeah.
But it's so hard not to compare yourself to.
It is hard. And I have quite a few of my books are indie, and I want to do more indie, and I'm trying to find the time to make more time for that. It's very difficult.
Yeah.
It's still hard.
Like, yeah, I mean, I don't
5 more hours in a day, please?
Yeah,
just
I know.
Five?
I need like 5 hours in a day extra. Yeah, well,
five.
And all, I mean, because again, it's just, there is an emotional and there's actually a physical toll in doing that. Even if you had those five extra hours.
That's good too. Five extra.
You're like,
days
I'll take that too.
Yeah.
But you know, if you had 5 extra hours every day and you actually just buckled down and wrote, like your physical body and your emotional, like that is, it's, but again, when I finish a book, I'm tired. I my back is jacked and my
your back,
you know,
is
I'm
definitely mm-hmm.
like that. Somebody said to me
you
the other day,
"You feel like you ran a marathon."
Yeah, you feel exhausted, and you're emotionally like, I just mm-hmm. want to lay and be quiet, not speak to anyone. Like mm-hmm. it's tiring. But yeah, somebody the other day said to me, "What's your best advice for new authors?" And I'm like, "Stand up every 20 minutes." And they're mm-hmm. like, "That's not what we meant." And I'm like, "No, but like literally,
but
that's
really,
the best thing you can do for
really
yourself."
Important.
Because my back is so messed up. So I'm trying to help
true.
You.
It's very true. I was having pains in my lower back yesterday. And I was like, whoa. And it's because of my positioning.
Sitting too much. Yeah.
Sitting too much.
Long,
and writing on my
twisting
bed.
Twisting yourself up. Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, my God. I'm not allowed to write on the bed anymore. I get yelled at.
I know. I purposely came up to the office to have this conversation. Because, you know, most of my work is done on my bed / office there, which is where I write most of my things. But it's so bad on your back.
Oh, it's so bad on your back. I don't know that we really give enough time or energy to talking about those physical costs that we pay for doing this. You know, I mean, it's something that nobody really ever discusses. It's like how, you know, hard it is on your hand. Like somebody, I know you knit and
yes. It's very bad.
I can't do it. Like I hurts my hands and I'm like, no, these are the money makers.
No, it's really hard. Plus I have rheumatoid arthritis.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I can only knit for a certain length of time. I can only type for a certain length of time. I have the hardest time with training dictation software. I don't know why. It could be the New York accent or just the way I talk when I start dictating fast. It doesn't get all the words, but I've been really working on trying to train it mm-hmm. because typing for long lengths of time, my joints really start to hurt. It's more of a physical job than people give us credit for.
Yeah. I mean, we're not putting up drywall all day and nobody wants to discount that that's a super hard job. And
that's a super hard job too.
But like, it, you know, I mean, the idea that somehow, you know, we're laying around in a bathtub typing on a, you know, typing in there, you know, or writing longhand and eating bonbons is like such a ridiculous notion.
Nice. That would be nice.
Oh, my God. I would. I just lay in that bath all day eating those bonbons.
But then you'd get,
I'd be so happy.
Then you'd get all shrivelly and that's not good for your skin either.
Yeah, I'd be pruney.
Yeah.
So,
don't do that.
Be bad. So you talked about just now about being a hybrid author, and I know that you're mm-hmm. also you're traditionally published, you're also indie published. What came first? You were traditionally published first, is that?
Well,
did I guess that right?
Well,
tell me. Just
you know,
tell me. You tell me.
You would think I would know, right? Wouldn't you think I would know?
No, because I'm a writer and I understand. I understand.
when you've been doing it a long time, it feels like it all sort of.
It braids together.
It does breed together. And then when you start getting rights back and you're like, oh, and I'm one of these people, I've gotten to be a woman of a certain age. And I'm like, I don't even want to look back. and then it sort of all things started all meshing together at the same time.
Yeah.
But I guess I was sort of traditionally published, finally got an acceptance after being rejected by everybody and their mother. Seriously, everybody.
Yeah.
There ever was in the history of New York and not New York. finally got a yes with my first book, Through the Lens, from a small press, Crimson, who is now gone. And they published me, and my Creative Heart series. I got the rights back for that series, and I published them myself, around Through the Lens, a little bit after Through the Lens time, or Seduction's Canvas Time, something like that came out. My book, which was, I don't know which came first, Through the Lens or Bounce, but I think Through the Lens. I had my book Bounce, which was really, maybe Bounce was first. I think Through the Lens. The book of my heart. Bounce was really rejected by everyone, everyone, everyone. Bounce, I really wanted it published, but nobody would take it. And what I decided to do, I said, you know what, I'm going to self-publish this book. I'm just going to go for it. And I self-published Bounce. And what happened was it ended up winning a Golden Leaf from the New Jersey chapter, the New Jersey RWA chapter. And I ended up winning that Golden Leaf, and I had a pitch appointment with Kensington the next day, and I get really, I mean, really nervous. That's, most people do when they have pitch appointments. I'm like, oh, don't you hate, every writer hates going to conferences and having those appointments. Like, what are you going to say? What are you going to say? I didn't know what to
Yeah, it
say.
feels awkward.
It's
And
so,
how do you sum up a book in a sentence?
yeah,
And
how
if you
do
don't
you? It's
sum it
like that
up right,
elevator
then
pitch,
it's
they
the
have the
worst.
things, and they're like, oh, get your elevator pitch together. And I'm like, I don't know. Write it on my hand. I don't know. What's your book about? I don't know. It's a romance.
I don't even remember my name when someone
I
asks
don't,
me a direct question like
seriously.
that.
So all I did was I sat down across from the editor and I said, hi, I won the Golden Leaf last night. And she said, good opening. She's like, good opening. Send it to me. And that's how I got my contract with Kensington, by saying I won the award, and I sent Kensington Insert Groom Here, and that was my first book with sort of with a bigger house, and I guess my first entrance into traditional publishing, and kind of getting my name out there a little bit bigger. That's my
And
story.
so since you do both, and I know that I mean, we just kind of had this whole conversation about the speed and the needing a deadline. I mean, there's obviously advantages and disadvantages to both. There's a lot of control in indie, but then it's kind of false control because there's also a lot of stuff that's out of your control just in
Yeah,
publishing in
true.
general. Do you like that process that you do in the traditional market where it's, having that deadline and having that feedback from consistent editing and all that sort of thing?
It's hard. I'm kind of, well, you, I mean, you've spoken to me for a while. So, being the visual person that I am, and I probably sound like a little bit of a control freak. So I do love the control of indie with things like cover art and all that kind of stuff, even though, there's only so much control you have, especially being an author of color. Finding good cover art is always just a nightmare, no matter what. But I do love in indie having a little more freedom that way. But no matter what, indie or traditional, I love a good editor. I'm the type of writer who appreciates a good editor. I think you need it, whether you're traditional, whether you're indie, you need to have a great editor, having your back. I will fight for my story, will fight for my book, but I'm not so precious with my words that I'm like, oh, my writing is so top-notch that I don't need help. I feel that, so I'm happy with traditional when I have a good editor to say, hey, guess what?
I noticed this.
I noticed this, so I'm happy with that, in traditional. So that part I like. I like the editing, but the slowness of traditional publishing drives me a little crazy. The whole hurry up and wait, and then when you wait, then it's like rush, 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 and do that. That part drives me crazy.
You're going along and they're like, you have to be on deadline. Don't miss the deadline. But the
Don't
book's
miss
not
the
coming out
deadline,
for a
then you
year and
don't
a
miss the
half.
deadline, and then it's like, oh, hurry up, do edits in 3.5 seconds, and then that, and it's like, oh my
We gave you
goodness.
these edits. Can you have these back to us by, I don't know, 4 hours from now? Like,
That and it's always, during the time you're away, and this that part makes me want to jump out the window. Drives me crazy. That part I don't love. You know, it's always the slowness, and that really makes me nuts. But so, you know, there's pros and cons to each. But that's just how it is. There's yeah.
Well, nothing's perfect.
Nothing, nowhere is
But
perfect.
at least there's more options, and I like that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean,
Yeah.
I probably would have stopped writing if there wasn't indie out there, because I just couldn't do traditional anymore. I just could not do it anymore. So,
I
you know, I
completely
mean, like,
understand.
I function a lot better in the independent system. And that doesn't mean everybody's going to function better in the independent system, but I mean, like, the fact that there's at least an option for that is something that I think is really matters.
I think, you know, I it, it and it's so hard. Well, it's hard in both, you know. Especially as an author of color, it's hard in both. But you know,
Yes.
I think it's I love that there's more options in the independent system. And that whole I've been around long enough to see the stigma in indie break away, which I'm really,
Yes.
really happy about. I'm so thrilled
Yeah.
about it. And to see people doing well in indie and making, you know, a good living, I think that's wonderful. And I just
Yeah.
want to see more of that.
Well, I mean, you've sort of talked about it a little bit here, and you've been super vocal in the "We Need Diverse Romance" topic and hashtag, and you know, talking about diverse romance, and your experiences in traditional publishing and independent publishing, and as a woman of color, as a black woman specifically, are you seeing shifts? You know, because you have been around long enough to kind of watch things sort of change. I mean, they are always changing in publishing. Do you feel like those shifts are becoming moving in a positive direction?
I think they are. I think there's still lots of work to be done,
Yes.
unfortunately. It's like you take step for you take steps forward, but then you see,
Big punches back,
yeah,
unfortunately,
you
sometimes.
see things, you know, then you see things that look that it looks like things are going backwards. You know, it's all there's lots of what I see now are power struggles, I think. Which might be coming out of a certain amount of fear of losing people, losing what they consider their placement, placement in their power in the power dynamic, which is kind of ridiculous to me, you know.
Well, that power is such a drug. Like, it's
It
so
is a
addictive
drug,
to,
you
like,
know.
if you've always benefited off of a system and you don't
Yeah.
recognize that you've benefited off the system, you
But I think
never feel any desire to change
I do, but you know, I think that, and this could just be me. I could, you know,
it.
my opinions are my own,
It's a good
and
disclaimer.
yeah, that's my disclaimer. My opinions are only my own, and I strongly feel, you know, I'm not, you know, it's like I'm not every woman, and I'm definitely not every black woman.
Sure.
The whole if you don't realize your position. I don't think that's completely true. I
Sure.
think a lot of people saying they don't realize their position or didn't realize whether consciously or subconsciously, people do realize their position and have
Yeah.
realized and have known it for a long time, and that's why they feel this fear, the fear of losing their position of power or losing potential dollars and money, even though there is dollars and money to go all around. I think that's where we're having a lot of trouble, you know. In romance, there's in romance and RWA in particular, there's been a whole lot of infighting, you know, chapter levels and things like that. I'd like to see a lot of the things shift on to publishing.
Yeah.
And, you know, store placement and distribution and things like that, because I
Yeah, I
think
mean, when
it's
you look at
yeah.
that ripped bodice
Survey.
survey,
Yeah.
it's always just so dis it's disheartening to
It is
see, you know,
disheartening.
that, you know, I mean, the first year they publish it and this sort of information gets outed, even though it's information that I think most of us could see without the statistics. But like, now you've been outed by statistics, and your response to that is to then publish fewer books the
Yeah.
next year, to me is just like, wow, you're just being right out there with your racism. Like you don't care enough to pursue it when you can see it right in front of you and you're claiming that you care. And then your response is to them publish 2% fewer books.
People will call it a business decision.
Right.
And that's the right of business, I guess. But I consider it, you know, economic disenfranchisement of race, of a whole race, and right. something that has been going on for a long time. And that's what, you know, that's been a huge thing for me with tweeting we need diverse romance, because honestly that's been my bottom line with it. You know, when you're doing that, you're holding classes of people back economically.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not right. You know, I always feel like, you know, my Con Edison, my, you know, electric bill is the same as my neighbor's, whether I'm black or I'm white. Mm-hmm. And if I'm making less on the dollar, that's not fair.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, and something needs to be done about it. You know, we can go all day with infighting and this and that and the other thing, but, you know.
Right. At the end of the day, if the publishers don't change something.
Yeah. Something.
You know, even if you get, you know, chapter level, you know, changes made and national level changes made. And those are great things, but you're absolutely right. I mean, there will be no impact economically
if the publishers don't change.
If
the publishers don't change, there will be no change. You know, I think it's a big problem. You know, segregation of lines is a huge problem. I think the way romances have been tagged with, you know, separation by African American romance, tagging them that way, LGBTQ tagging them that way, when it's, you know, romance is romance is romance.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
I don't think it's right. You know? And especially when you pull it out as African American romance. You know? I'll accept it when you tag Caucasian romance.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Don't tell me that it's not about that.
You know, I'm sorry. And it's hard for me to say this because I am in an African-American romance line, and that makes it all the more difficult. But, you know, I can speak for it myself. I definitely want to sell books. I need to sell books. But there are certain places that won't carry African-American romance. And that's just the certain stores just won't carry it.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I live in a neighborhood that's mostly Caucasian, very small percentage African American, and have a couple of bookstores by me. My books have been out for a couple of weeks now, and neither one of them have my books. I haven't seen my book. You know, I have a box of my books. I've seen my books physically, yes. But not walking into a store. Neither one of my stores. Not walking into any store near me. Physically myself, I have not been able to see and take a picture with it.
Right.
So that's kind of hard as a writer.
Yeah. Well, it is.
It's hard and disheartening. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's an experience this is the thing that when we talk about traditional publishing, you know, I mean, forever people are saying, well, don't you miss seeing your books in the bookstore? My answer is no, because I like the money. But I will absolutely and very gladly take the money.
You know, and, you know, sure. I understand seeing the books, and please, you know, please give me a great Amazon deal. If I can get a huge Amazon deal with a bigger audience, then I'm fine. Not seeing my books in the bookstores, you know, that's the difference. I'd rather have the broader audience, but it's really upsetting.
But there is part of that experience.
Problem.
Exactly. Because if you're writing for Kensington, you ought to be distributed in every bookstore that there is that Kensington distributes to. If you're seeing other Kensington books and you're not seeing yours, then that's a problem.
It is a problem.
And there's a reason that's a problem.
Yeah.
And it is. You're absolutely right. I mean, like, looking at those distribution chains and who's running those distribution chains and who has control over who's in those distribution chains, who in publishing is fighting for or not fighting for these lines.
Yeah.
I think that's a really important step. And it is something that I think as writers that we need to keep pushing them on and keep demanding on. Have you ever felt
pushback? And we might have to change that to say if you're writing for a publisher instead of if you're writing for you know who. Just to say,
Just
I'm already gonna
saying.
get in enough trouble for this interview.
Well, I know that you've written romantic comedy, and this was something that I know has come up.
That's probably the most of what I write. I didn't really think I was a romantic comedy writer, which is funny, huh?
But then other people always describe you as that. Like, it's
I
so
know.
Funny. Like,
I didn't describe myself as I thought I was. I was like, oh, I'm just writing romance, and then somebody said, you know, you're funny. I was like, really?
I am.
I am.
Thank you.
Okay, if you
Well,
say so.
I know that the oftentimes when you have characters that are black, especially that there's some expectation that there's going to be trauma, all capital letters. There must be trauma. So the book needs to be about the trauma. And I've talked to Beverly Jenkins about this, Lisa
Yep.
Cole about this. And I mean, have you felt pushback writing something that is more light and romantic comedy? And do you feel like that's something that there's an expectation that where's the trauma?
I don't feel the pushback writing romantic comedy now, since people have told me, oh, this is your voice
They've
and
given
this is
up.
what you
You
write.
are a
They've
romantic,
given up. They're like, this is her voice and this is what she writes. But early in my writing career, I'll never forget it. One of my first agent, I was always a reader, a huge reader of romantic comedies and things like that. And it's just, you know, I was just, I write what's in my head, and I think it must be, you know, I'm a native New Yorker and this is just my stream of consciousness, the way I talk. And he said to me, I love your writing, I love your work. Can you make it blacker? This is I knew exactly what he was talking about, but of course I looked at him and I was like, what do you mean? You know, what are you
Yeah,
talking
challenge
about? Please,
that
what do you mean? You know, and he stuttered through it and couldn't come up with it. I knew exactly what he wanted. I was like, what do you mean? Would you like me to set it in space? What are you talking about?
shit.
So because that's what he wanted. I mean, there are people I've heard, you know, when they get a traditional romance without trauma, without this overcoming adversity experience, and it's just, you know, it's a black billionaire story, or it's a CEO story, or it's a romantic comedy, or it's a whatever story, they feel that they didn't get the black experience in the romance, which is the worst thing in the world to me. It's like, you know,
Like the
just
worst stereotype.
it's the worst stereotype, but I've heard it from readers. I've heard it from other writers. It's just horrifying. And it's like, I really don't get it. You know, I've even heard from friends, which breaks my heart. And not from black friends, from white friends who have said, oh, I love your book. Your heroine is just like any other woman. I'm like, really? You mean what, with a vagina? Is that what are you talking about? It's, you know, why can you only relate to us when we're sad and not happy? I mean, I've been this year, we I'll be my husband and I will be married 30 years, which, oh my goodness.
Congratulations.
Thanks. I'm like, oh wow, how'd that happen? We're both like, how in the world did that happen? You
Yeah, I don't
know,
know how I
and
got old. I
you
don't
know,
know how it
we're
happened.
you know, it's like, I don't know how that happened. But it's just, you know, we're just like any other normal couple, highs, lows, ups, downs, whatever. You know, what's so special about us about that? It's not like we're some sort of strange I'm gonna say the wrong anomaly. You know, why is it? I feel that this is the disservice that the media and the entertainment industry and publishing has done by othering black romance and you know, the African American experience as being something that is only a
Right, that
sad
is so
story.
vastly different and is
Yeah.
only traumatic
Only
and
traumatic. Yeah.
right. And
It's
then when you
horrible.
read the black billionaire story, then you know there's a huge audience of people that are like, well, that doesn't make sense. It doesn't fit into what I think should exist
Yeah.
versus you know and so writing a story that is like in that language, oh, it's a normal romance.
It's ridiculous.
It's almost,
as if,
I mean,
every Caucasian person in America is living so rich and fancy, and there are no people having
right.
hardship stories that are Caucasian.
Exactly.
It's sort of making a false expectation for Caucasians also, though.
Yeah. No, that's true.
Because everybody has struggles and everyone has stories of triumph.
Yeah. Right.
And
those
every,
are the things,
in
those
every
are the
ethnicity,
things that bind us together.
You know,
yes.
in this country.
And when we don't share those stories that are just the normal everyday stories of every person,
yeah.
that's the way that you unother, is that you
absolutely.
Know what I mean? Like, oh, you had that experience, you know, in your marriage at this point. Oh, I had that same experience. Like,
yeah,
those are the
of
things
course.
That make us the same. And when you don't tell those stories in a complete way, it's a loss for white readers and for black readers, because that's how, I mean,
because we all have different
it.
Struggles
yeah.
and we all
exactly.
have different stories of joy.
Yeah.
And
all of us have that full experience of life. I don't know anybody that hasn't had some kind of trauma.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we exist. And I don't know anybody that hasn't had some kind of joy. And I mean, all of those stories are valuable, and they are all valuable on the same spectrum. And But I mean,
it makes
awesome,
me crazy.
Though, that you get to you are writing romantic comedy, so you are saying, like, that's why I think, you know, coming back to when we were talking about romance being important. I mean, that's the big middle finger to that sort of white supremacy, is to say, like, no, I'm writing a romantic comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Screw you.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there is a it's an act of rebellion against that, and you know, the more acts of rebellion that publishing sees, and the more acts of rebellion that we see as being successful, I mean, hopefully that also just keeps expanding the market, and then that expands the readership, and then that expands minds. It's just such a
let's hope. I hope so.
That's crossing fingers.
Crossing fingers. I hope so. I hope so. And it's not, you know, such a strange thing. It's really just normal life.
No, it's just normal life. We're all living a normal life.
Yeah. Trying,
all of
trying,
us.
Trying to,
yeah.
And making it cute and romantic and funny.
Yeah.
You know?
Making it maybe slightly more romantic than it is.
Slightly more romantic. You know. Slightly the people, you know, a little more good looking than
right. Everybody's
than,
a little more
how we might look right now with baggy eyes. Is I'm talking about myself here.
No, I have them too.
No sleeping baggy eyes.
Yeah, no, that's me
true
too.
Story. I said to my mother a little while ago, I was like, oh, I've got to do a podcast interview. So she's like, go put on some makeup. I'm like, Ma, it's over the phone. She's like, still go put on some makeup.
Yeah, I'm doing an interview in a couple weeks with somebody, and I'm not actually sure if it's like visual or just audio. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to have to put on like clothes with like pants with buttons and makeup. I feel very stressed out right now.
Yes, I completely understand. That's a lot of pressure. It's like, oh,
so much pressure.
I have to put on shoes. Wait a minute.
Yeah, I have to put on shoes. Like, why?
Why can I wear slippers to this interview? Don't
crossing fingers.
Down.
I'm going to be able to wear slippers. Yeah.
Don't pan down.
Yeah. No.
The true writer's life. Don't pan down.
Yeah. No, that is it. Yeah, that should be our theme. Romance Landia. Don't pan down.
Don't pan down. Keep the camera up. It's like, look up here, and we're not talking about.
My eyes are up here.
My eyes are up here. Don't pan down. Don't pan below the desk.
It's not about the boobs. It's just about the sweatpants.
It's not about the boobs. We're just talking about pants and no shoes.
Well, it is shocking, but our time, we have gone through our whole hour. Told you it was going to go so fast.
You were right. Thank you. I really appreciate that.
So do you want to tell everyone, this will be airing in October, so do you want to tell everyone about what's coming up, or what your latest book will be, or, you know, what's going on that they should go pick up from KM Jackson / Quanah Jackson?
Ooh, what's going on? Okay, October. Well, my latest is Too Sweet to Be Good, which is out.
That's
now.
A cute title.
Isn't it cute?
I like that.
Thank you.
It's kind of cheeky and naughty. I like it.
I like that. I liked it too. I think it's so cute. So that's out now. And I'd say pick it up. I'm very excited about that. And coming next year, I'll be out under Quanah Jackson. I say it like I can't remember my name, right? Quanah Jackson with Real Men Knit, which I'm excited about. And that'll be out in May 2020, which is a new series that's starting from Berkeley Romance, a new series for me from Berkeley Romance, about four brothers who run a knitting shop in Harlem. And I'm so excited about it.
Oh my God. When I saw that, I was just like, Look, that sounds so, I can't, it sounds so good. Like, I need, is that up for pre-order right now? The first one?
Not yet. Not yet. But as soon as it is, I will be shouting because.
Make sure you follow Quanah on social media. Those who know
me, I live on, I'm on Twitter way too much.
I know, so. Me too.
I know, we're both like, Twitter. So yeah, I will be, when it's out, I will be shouting it from the rooftops and I cannot wait. I'm so excited.
I'm so excited for it.
I'm already, book one is in, and I'm excited to start on book two for it because these brothers have me very excited.
That's awesome. I'm so excited for it too.
I'm thrilled about it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. This has been Journeys of Romance. I'm Jess Michaels, your host. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you again next time.